this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Sunday, January 29th, 2006, and this is show number 28. Well, we had a big night last night. Fancy dinner dance in downtown L.A. at the Bonaventure Hotel. Just imagine a bunch of 50-year-old engineers dancing to La Bamba. Whew, it doesn't get any crazier than that. You'd be glad to know that my husband and I brought along both of our laptops to the hotel. It was very romantic. Sitting across from each other, sending little instant messages. Boy, it's great when engineers marry. Anyway, our new country update. This week we got Bosnia-Herzegovina, Bulgaria, Cameroon, and Latvia. We're up to 69 countries now. I gotta tell you, I'll be sad when I can't do this anymore, because I think in about 3 weeks, we're gonna have all of the countries listening to the No Silicast. They're coming in so fast. So welcome to all of our new listeners, and I should be sure to tell you that I do very elaborate show notes, word for word practically, so don't worry about writing down links and the like. You'll find them all in the show notes at podfeet.com. Well, I've got an interesting thing sent to me by listener Susan of atpotter.org. It's about a podcatching tool for the visually impaired. The URL is actually apotter.org, but she refers to it as @potter, the little at symbol. So Susan has developed a podcatcher for the visually impaired, and it's not for those who are blind, but those who are just visually impaired. And it's a very interesting project on many levels, because while there are screen readers for the blind, there aren't a lot of tools for people who are simply visually impaired. And the requirements, according to her, are actually very different. Her site points out that macular degeneration is hitting more and more of us because of our longer lifespan. Yay for that! But not so good on the vision front. And more of us will need tools such as these to continue to participate. I certainly have empathy on this topic, as my mother has macular degeneration, so it's pretty cool to see tools coming out for people like all of us who will end up there someday, probably. I was thrilled when she told me that she would include my feed as one of the starter set of vision-friendly feeds. The real kick of doing this podcast is knowing that people get value from it. I simply love helping other people get the information they need. You know, a lot of people say that the community is dead because we don't know our neighbors, you know, nobody builds a barn for the other guy anymore. But I say that the community's not dead, it's simply moved online. I mean, how cool is it to help someone from Latvia or Cameroon fix a problem? That's a real rush. Anyway, I digress. You notice a trend here? My friends say I have ADD. AppPotter is designed to make lots of use of HTML for viewing collections and text-to-speech for user feedback. For now, this podcatcher is Windows only, but someday Susan said she will port it to the Mac. Even if you're fully sighted, head over to apotter.org and check out the site. She's got AT&T's Naturally Speaking set up to describe what the tool can do. It's really, really cool. So listener Greg wrote in with an interesting problem. He's hearing impaired and also looking for an excuse to buy an iPod with video. Well, who can blame him, right? He said, asked me if I'd sacrifice myself by checking out how videos on the iPod would look if they had subtitles encoded into the video. So he suggested using the free software Handbrake. As you might remember, I reviewed Handbrake Lite last week or the week before, which is simply a one-button push that takes you from the movie, like from a DVD, straight into the iPod video. Handbrake has a lot more things that it can do. So again, Handbrake Lite just goes DVD to iPod video. So I checked this thing out, and Handbrake worked like a charm. It turns out it's a full-fledged tool from handbrake.m0k.org, and it's also free. In the full-fledged version, you have options to mess with the frame rate, the quality, defining it either by bit rate or target size on your disk, which is a great idea. Like you say, okay, you know, I've only got, you know, 75 meg or 100 meg or 300 meg. You want to just say, make it as good as you can within that. So that's kind of cool. You can also encode it in grayscale, which I assume cuts down on the size too. I know if you scan photos in grayscale, it uses a lot less information than if you try to do color. So this might be the right way to go if you don't have a lot of space. So it's kind of funny, the idea though of having a 2006 iPod video and go watch a DVD in black and white on it. Well, I think that'd be a great idea. Get some good I Love Lucy shows on there. That'd be nice. I know it's silly, but that show still makes me laugh. Wait, there I go. There's my ADD kicking in again. Back to Handbrake. Handbrake also allows you to define the file formats that you want the output, either to be, say, MPEG-4 or AVI, and the codecs it's going to use. If the DVD you're ripping from has them, you can burn the subtitles into the video. You can't turn them off once it's burned in, though, and you can choose the language you want to have playing when it is burned. I've got a screen snapshot in the show notes that shows you what I'm talking about. There's a lot of little choices to go through. So you can pick the language, like I said, but that menu will only show those language which the DVD supports. And that really confused me at first because I put in the excellent movie Thumb Wars and it didn't give me any choices for subtitles. Thumb Wars is an reenactment of the entire movie Star Wars acted out with thumbs dressed up as the characters. Perhaps I'm not showing proper respect to the importance of the Star Wars films, but Thumb Wars made me giggle, so there it is. Wait, I was talking about ripping DVDs to iPod video format, wasn't I? Well, don't expect to rip right through these unless you have a way faster Mac than me. On the 1.25 GHz G4 PowerBook, we're looking at 4.5 hours to rip an hour and a half video. I'll be cockier when I get my hands on the MacBook Pro, I hope. So fast forward 4.5 hours, and I tried to pull this video into the iPod. It didn't work. I was able to pull it into iTunes, but once I had it in iTunes and I synced my iPod video, nothing happened. So I went to the Handbrake forums, which are pretty extensive. People are really adding a lot of good information in there. And I quickly found that it was necessary to go into iTunes and pull down the menu Advanced to convert it to iPod. So it says Convert Selection to iPod. I have a screen snapshot of that on the website. I didn't time this part of it, maybe I will next time, but the progress bar was moving really slow while I watched, so it had to take at least another half an hour, maybe a lot more than that, I'm not really sure. Now the real point of Greg's question is whether the subtitles are actually readable on the iPod video. Well, I'm 47 years old and I'm just starting to have trouble reading things up close, but I can actually see the titles reasonably well on this. Just to show how much I'm willing to sacrifice for our listening audience, I even broke out my reading glasses. Well, nobody was looking and they didn't see me, so it's okay. And it was actually quite readable with them. So if you're younger than me or willing to actually wear reading glasses, I think it's quite possible that this would be a good experience for the hearing impaired. I sure hope you're a speed reader, though. Those subtitles are up for a really short time, aren't they? In the show notes, I've included a couple of photos of the screen of the iPod from different distances. For the one showing the full iPod, I tried to size the photo so that normal screen resolution, it would be just about the scale of a real iPod so you could get a feel for how big it would be. I had a little trouble with moiré patterns, those little wavy interference lines, but I think you'll get the idea. Check out the pictures and let me know what you think. I wanted to do some background on possible options for our Windows listeners, since Handbrake is a Mac-only application. So trying to find ways to encode video for iPod use. So I went over to CNET's download.com site, which I believe is supposed to be one of the big sites. So I found 16 titles with a search of DVD iPod video. The irritating thing was that most of these were paid for software, and the ones that said they were free were just free trials and actually cost money. That's pretty rude. I mean, you know, if it's going to cost money, just say it costs money. It's not that big a deal. So these applications cost some real money, too. The cheapest one was $25, which isn't that bad, but they ranged up from there to $80. If someone knows a good freeware or low-priced shareware equivalent to Handbrake for Windows, please shoot me a line at allison@podfeet.com, and I'll let everyone know about it. Well, it's been a while since I did a movie review. I got to get back into the groove of that. Now that the holidays are over, I expect I'll be back to my normal movie-watching routine on Friday nights. So this Friday night, we watched the Tom Clancy film Some of All Fears, starring Ben Affleck, Morgan Freeman, and James Cromwell. If you haven't seen it in a long time, it's worth going back again, and if you haven't ever seen it, it's kind of fun. I like a good action film, and while the premise of the film is just silly, a lot of it anyway, it's got lots of stuff blowing up, which is always good. There's a scene where Jack Ryan, played by Ben Affleck, is driving a SUV through what's essentially a war zone after a nuclear explosion. Cars are on fire, people are screaming, and he's sitting there with a Palm Pilot in his car doing wireless email to a guy in Russia. Yeah, no interruption in service. Right. Well, if you can get past those kinds of silly things, the relationship between the characters played by Affleck and Freeman is warm and funny, and Cromwell plays the president as a real human quite well. I enjoyed it, as I have all of the Clancy-inspired films. This next topic is going to be really hard to explain, but stay with me because I think by the time I'm done, you'll get a good idea of what it is. I'm going to give it my best shot, and then you can head over to the website to see what I mean. Research Department Niraj found an interesting company called the Hive Group, which has developed a really unique method to visually represent many individual variables in order to make decisions. They have demonstrations on their website at hivegroup.com in a bunch of different businesses so you can see how it works. I haven't got into the meat of it yet, so let me describe it using the demo for the kinds of things we really care about. Let's say we want to buy something at Amazon.com. Let's say that you want to buy an external drive from Amazon that's, say, around 60 gigabytes. On hivegroup.com, first you click on Applications on the left side. Then two tabs come up, one showing corporate applications and one for consumer applications. On the consumer app, there's links for iTunes, Amazon, Pete's Coffee and Tea, Wikipedia, and News is Free. Click on the Amazon.com link for this demo. Then step one is to select a category within Amazon. In our case, computer add-ons. Since Amazon is a gigantic store, step two is to narrow our search down. In our case, we're going to look under drives and storage, and we'll click on external and up to 60 gigabyte. Really narrows it down. You'd think that's, what, like one, two drives by now. But you'd be wrong, because there's a zillion of them at Amazon. So that's the setup, and now you'll start to see the power of the Hive Group's technology. What you're now faced with is a graphic sectioned off by vendor with little boxes within each vendor area, and the size of each box represents the price of the item, and the color representing it is the level of customer satisfaction. For example, in our example, inside VST Technologies, if you hover over the biggest box, up pops a very expensive drive with a photo of the drive and a few details, including price and some of the technical details, and it shows you the average customer rating. The box is also color-coded. The green boxes, for example, are the highest-rated items. At this point, you can see that you would want to hover over the smallest and yet still green box, because the smallest would be the lowest price, but green would be the highest customer satisfaction. That would work great, but it only works if the data is complete. When I tried looking at the smallest green boxes, all of the small green ones had not applicable as the price. So once it gets filled in, I think that would be a little better. But as if this weren't enough information ready, the user can change what the size and color mean. For example, the color can be changed to represent how many reviews they are, or the sales rank, or the price. The user can change how it's sorted. The default is to sort by vendor, so you're in these little chunks of vendors, but it can be sorted again by price or by sales rank. Even more flexibility is added by sliders on the side that let the user limit the price, rating, number of reviews, and sales rank. For example, if I want to limit the price to $150 max, average customer rating of, say, between 3 and 5, and there has to be at least 5 or 6 customer reviews, it narrowed my choices down to two drives that met my criteria, and a bunch more that didn't actually have prices. Think that's enough? Well, there's more. I can limit the search to only those items that are actually available. That eliminated all of the ones that had no prices and left me with an I/O gear for $135 and a smart disk for $113, and they had 3 stars and 4 stars respectively. The Hive Group's technology is pretty powerful, as you can see, and I was able to reduce hundreds of options down to the two that met my criteria in just a few clicks, rather than spending hours reading through pages on Amazon's website. Check it out at hivegroup.com and let me know if you find anything useful in there. I've started thinking about a lot of ways we could use this at work to reduce massive amounts of data down to just a tight few things that you needed to know out of all these gobs of data. Listener Neil was bored on Saturday night at a hotel in Orlando, and he ran across the definitions of geek and nerd in Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia. I'll go into more detail about what a wiki is in a later show, but the main idea is that anyone can contribute to the information posted, so Wikipedia sometimes has arguments going on about the true meaning of things. What more likely to be hotly debated is by the difference between a nerd and a geek? A nerd is defined as, quote, a stereotypical or archetypical designation, refers to someone who is perceived to be of normal to above average intelligence and whose interests are, often in science and mathematics, are not shared by mainstream society. Most people's interests are about sports, music, fashion, food, or weather, but nerds have interests that are more encyclopedic and are in the fields of science and technology. They go on to explain that the nerd was generally considered derogatory when it was first introduced in 1951. Sadly, they also add that nerds generally lack personal hygiene skills and lack social graces and are usually fat. A geek, on the other hand, is a person who is fascinated, perhaps obsessively, by obscure or very specific areas of knowledge and imagination, and a person who has chosen concentration rather than conformity, one who pursues skill, especially technical skill, and imagination, not mainstream social acceptance. I like the definition of geek much better than nerd because it says nothing about being fat. Two odd references to geek were in there. One says that geek is actually an acronym from the U.S. military and that it stands for General Electric Engineering Knowledge. They say in there that this might actually be what they call a backronym, meaning they made it up to meet the word geek and kind of did it backwards. And don't forget that the 19th century, a geek was the person who would bite off the heads of chickens at the county fair. Yuck. Luckily, the term geek has risen in society, and it is now even a badge of honor within particular fields, and is now more of a compliment denoting extraordinary skill. Yep, 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 I'm a geek. That's what we're all about, right? I think it's hilarious that this page has a big banner at the top saying that it's protected from editing until disputes have been resolved on the neutrality of the reporting. Geeks arguing, that's good stuff right there. So check out the links in the website and you can read more about what it means to be a geek or a nerd. One last thing tonight, I found out something delightful during my weekly visit to CompUSA. It turns out that TurboTax has finally combined their Mac and PC versions into one disk, which means that Mac people no longer have to pay $10 more than Windows people to get TurboTax. Huzzah! Equity at last! I've been using TurboTax for years, started way back when it was called MacinTax, so this was a welcome change. It now lists for $39, including a rebate on state, which supposedly costs $30 anyway, but, you know, I don't think anybody ever pays for it separately, because you always get it when you buy it anyway. This was TurboTax Deluxe, by the way, I'm talking about. So that's going to wrap it up for the NoSillaCast tonight. As always, feedback is very welcome, especially if you find a cool freeware or shareware cross-platform tool that you'd like me to review. Write to me at allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.